This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
A loner from a broken family. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Thursday, May 26th, glad you could join us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
More unsettling details have been released about the gunman accused of the school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. We'll have the latest.
Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are again debating gun laws following the latest mass shooting. Hear who is saying what.
FDA officials get a grilling over their response to the Abbott baby formula crisis, admitting they were slow to act.
And a psychologist dives into what he calls a growing mental health crisis in our schools.
So a shooting comes along, and this is just enough to push some really over the edge of despair. I've been treating mental health now for 38 years, and we are seeing the effects of this.
Dr. Greg Jantz on how to tackle the nation's mental health crisis. New details emerging about the school massacre in Uvalde, Texas. Authorities say the 18-year-old gunman shot his grandmother in the face and left her wounded at her home, crashed her pickup truck near the Robb Elementary School, and exchanged shots with police on the scene. They were unable to stop him before he killed 19 children and two teachers who were all in the same classroom. The gunman was inside the school for roughly an hour before a tactical unit from the Border Patrol shot him several times, killing him. Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
And we need to realize that people who think that, well, maybe if we could just implement tougher gun laws, it's going to solve it. Chicago and L.A. and New York disprove that thesis.
Classmates say the gunman had few friends, struggled to get along with classmates, and frequently missed school. He frequently posted on social media, often using images that were macabre or violent. A neighbor said he had a distant and troubled relationship with his parents. The neighbor said his father left to work out of town and rarely returned. Familiar gun debates are taking place in Washington now. Democrats are expressing anger at the lack of action on gun legislation, but Republicans call new measures ineffectual. Some Republicans express support for extreme risk protection orders, known as red flag laws, aimed at allowing courts to temporarily take guns from people deemed dangerous. 19 states have adopted such measures, but opponents have attacked such bills as taking away gun owners' rights. Here's Florida Republican Rick Scott.
Unfortunately, what some people do is immediately want to take people's Second Amendment rights away, and I'm not willing to do that.
Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin.
It is unconscionable that it happens over and over. It is unforgivable that we as leaders have come to the point where we mouth words and do nothing.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer made no immediate plans to put legislation on the floor for a vote. Republicans tried to pass a bill yesterday through unanimous consent to establish federal school safety standards. Mr. Schumer blocked it, saying they should support gun control legislation. President Biden is walking a fine line on police reform. 2 years after the murder of George Floyd at the hands of law enforcement, seeking to balance calls for systemic change with an outward message of support for public safety officials. Mr. Biden yesterday signed a long-awaited executive order establishing a nationwide database of officers fired for misconduct in lieu of bipartisan policing legislation the president had hoped to sign by this time last year. The Justice Department this week also issued a memo requiring officers to intervene if another is using excessive force. More now from Brett Samuels, White House reporter at The Hill. Brett, what's behind this executive order?
Essentially, the goal is to increase accountability, increase transparency in policing. There'll be a database for federal officers who have been disciplined or fired for misconduct. There'll be new restrictions on transferring military equipment to local police departments and a couple other steps intended to increase accountability. But basically, this executive order has been in the works for months, and the White House has been trying to sort of appeal to all parties. Essentially, they've met with policing groups, they've met with civil rights groups, they've met with civil rights lawyers, families of victims of police violence. So, you know, they've they've really sort of taken their time, tried to listen to all parties on this and come out with an executive order that, you know, may not go far enough for some people, may go farther than others might like, but they're certainly trying to strike a balance, I think, in sort of meeting with all stakeholders here.
Why were police groups initially irked by the memo?
Yeah, I think there was some concern that the language went too far, was maybe too prescriptive in sort of policing what it is that, you know, officers could do in certain cases of use of force, or there was concern that, you know, if there was something on the books about use of force, that it would discourage officers from acting or make them think twice in certain situations. So as well as some language, I think, in the initial version about, you know, systemic racism in the justice system. So I think there was some concern on their end is more appealing to policing groups.
Got it. We're speaking with Brett Samuels, White House reporter at The Hill. His piece is called Biden Walks Fine Line on Police Reform 2 years after Floyd. It's federal officers or is it a federal database or both?
Yeah, so it's federal officers. It's a nationwide database, but it's federal officers would be in that database. And then local officers can either opt in, local departments can opt into that database. And any officers who serve on joint task forces, for example, where they collaborate with the federal government, those officers would be included as well.
You said some advocates on the left are still unhappy. What is it that they want from the president?
Yeah, I think the frustration is maybe more with Congress than it is with President Biden. We saw the House passed this George Floyd Justice and Policing Act some time ago that would have gone farther on some of these things like no-knock warrants, you know, banning chokeholds, governing use of force, things like that. And the president's executive order will take action on some of those things, so I think there will be some satisfaction there. But I think there's just general frustration with Congress that there seemed to be this momentum behind sort of addressing these systemic issues and really trying to increase accountability, increase transparency in policing across the country. And obviously that bill passed the House with Democratic votes, but in the Senate where it's 50-50, there just hasn't been a lot of movement. And it seems unlikely at this point that we'll see any kind of fresh debate. You know, it seems those talks sort of faltered and I'd be surprised if we saw them pick back up at this point with the midterms just a few months out.
Explain, if you would, the chokehold that can never be used ever. Like even if a police officer is fighting for his life with a suspect who's trying to grab his gun or something, and he's alone.
Right. So the executive order, what it lays out is essentially that there are exceptions where it is allowed. But basically, the order lays out that, you know, it is allowed in certain exceptions, but when it is used, it needs to be documented. Essentially trying to increase accountability so that there's a record of, you know, when are these things used? Was it proper to be used? Was it, you know, a situation that called for it, essentially? So increase some of the recording of those instances and the accountability of when those.
Thanks, Brett. Brett Samuels, White House reporter at The Hill. 14 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, the FDA gets a grilling. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies Summer Sale Event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Take the lead with Windows 10 Pro devices. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Summer Sale Event. Thanks for spending time with us. FDA officials are being criticized by members of Congress for a lack of urgency in the agency's response to complaints about possible baby formula contamination at an Abbott Laboratories plant. The closing of that facility in Michigan led to severe nationwide shortages. Senior FDA leaders said they only saw the complaint in February because of pandemic-related mail routing issues. The FDA inspected the plant following reports of bacterial infections in babies potentially linked to Abbott's formula and a whistleblower complaint in late October. Commissioner Robert Califf.
Frankly, the inspection results were shocking. Standing water, cracks in the key equipment that present the potential for bacterial contamination to persist, particularly in the presence of moisture.
A COVID outbreak at the plant delayed the inspection until the end of January. A second baby's death, potentially linked to the plant, was reported just after the factory was shuttered in February. Abbott plans to reopen the plant in 9 days. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Officials say the man who gunned down 19 children and two teachers in the Texas elementary school massacre wrote, "I'm going to shoot an elementary school," in a Facebook message 15 minutes before he barricaded himself inside a classroom and fired indiscriminately. Texas Department of Public Safety Director Steve McCraw.
There may be other clues out there right now that we're not aware of. This is the preliminary part of the investigation. We're going to scour everything to find anything that what could have indicated in some way, shape, or form that this individual is a threat to the community.
The two other messages on Facebook said, "I'm going to shoot my grandmother," and "I shot my grandmother." A spokesperson for Meta, Facebook's parent, said the warnings were sent in private one-to-one text messages that were found after the shooting. Facebook is cooperating with law enforcement.
Number two.
Before signing an executive order on policing on Wednesday, President Biden questioned laws that allow teenagers access to an AR-15-style rifle like the one authorities say the shooter used in Uvalde.
The idea an 18-year-old can walk into a store and buy weapons of war designed and marketed to kill is, I think, just wrong.
Biden said he and First Lady Jill Biden will soon travel to Texas to meet with grieving families.
Number three.
Russia's defense ministry claims his country will let foreign ships leave ports on the Black Sea and Sea of Azov. The Russian Foreign Ministry also claims five foreign ships are able to leave Mariupol. The statements come amid increasing concerns over a global food crisis if a Russia blockade of ships carrying vital export produce, especially wheat, is not lifted. Pennsylvania has officially authorized a recount in the too-close-to-call Senate primary between Republicans Mehmet Oz and David McCormick. Oz's lead has shrunk to fewer than 1,000 votes as counties tally provisional ballots. The election is boiling down to the kind of balloting that drew protests from former President Trump and his allies, mail-in votes. Boeing's crew taxi has returned to Earth from the International Space Station, completing a repeat test flight before NASA astronauts climb aboard. The Starliner capsule parachuted into the New Mexico desert just 4 hours after leaving the orbiting lab. Aside from thruster failures and cooling system snags, the overall mission was successful 2.5 years after a botched first try.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Coming up next, mortgage lenders in trouble. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. Mortgage lenders are scrambling to survive a sharp drop-off in the number of homeowners refinancing their loans, with demand drying up as interest rates rise. Mortgage giants including Wells Fargo and Rocket have trimmed staff this spring. More from Orla McCaffrey, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Orla, what are we looking at?
Those past 2 years was really a great time to be in the mortgage business. Lots of demand for people wanting to buy homes, for people wanting to refinance their homes specifically. Record high profit margins. Just a really, really lucrative time to be in the business. This year is a totally different story, and that's mostly because of the rise in interest rates, in mortgage rates that are now at about 5.3%. That has really kind of just totally sapped demand for the kind of mortgages that were driving that boom over the past 2 years.
So we're seeing lots of layoffs in this industry.
Yeah, right. So when you're not bringing as much money in the door, as much profit or revenue, you really have to just go back to what you can control, which are expenses, right? So lenders, non-banks and banks alike are laying off all those staff that they really hired over the past 2 years to be able to deal with that big jump in demand we saw. So they have to cut back that capacity. And a lot of times that results in layoffs.
Did you say business is off like 41%?
Right. 41% in the first quarter. That's at the 50 largest mortgage lenders. The forecast is a 37% drop for the full year in 2022. And depending on what kind of a mortgage lender you are, so if most of your business was refinances, which are the type of mortgage that is really just not happening anymore because of higher rates. So if you were heavy into that area, it's going to be a lot more painful for you right now because that has really dried up, and getting into purchase mortgages, so the kind of mortgage you get when you first buy a house, is even more competitive now, right?
We're speaking with Orla McCaffrey, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Rising Rates Are Battering Mortgage Lenders. I guess, too, not that it makes it any easier, I guess, but it's the nature of the business, right? These ebbs and flows in this line of work.
It really is the nature of the business. Like anyone who has been in the industry for a while will tell you that this is a boom or bust business. It's a cyclical business. It's a feast or famine business. But one thing that's different this time from, you know, previous kind of downturns in the mortgage business is just how quickly mortgage rates have risen. At the end of last year, rates averaged about 3.1%. Now they're at 5.3%. And that might not seem like a lot, especially for, you know, folks who maybe bought a house back in the 80s when rates were easily in the double digits. But for people really trying to break onto the housing market today, that jump from 3 to 5% can result in, you know, a couple hundred dollars. It can really kind of blow up their monthly budget and push them off the housing market, especially at a time when, you know, home prices are up 20% year over year as well.
Explain too, if you would, about how finishing up here, how the non-bank lenders probably were hit the hardest.
Non-banks are really making up just a much bigger part of mortgage business these days. I think they made 70% of all mortgages in 2021. And they also tend to do more refinances than the bank lenders. So that means there's kind of just a bigger hole in their income statement this year because refinance volume has dropped so much. So they have to really pivot and figure out how to get into the purchase market if they're not already there.
Thanks, Orla. Orla McCaffrey, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
The southern slate of primaries on Tuesday demonstrated that where there's a Republican will to take on former President Trump, there's a way to win. In Georgia and Alabama, Republicans nominated or advanced mainstream candidates in nearly every contested race. Analysis from Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. Josh, explain.
It was a rebuke to President Trump when it came to these Republican primaries, especially in Georgia, where Governor Brian Kemp didn't just win, but won in a landslide against Trump's favored candidate, former Senator David Perdue. And it was all across the Georgia ballot in race after race, from the governor's race to the Secretary of State's race to the Attorney General's race to even a few House races, where the Trump-backed candidate did very poorly in the results. And in Alabama, another very Republican state, it's a little more complicated, but the more establishment, more moderate candidate, Katie Britt, ended up doing extremely well, needing a runoff against Mo Brooks to win that seat, but she's in very good position, better position than a lot of the polls suggested going into last night.
Mo Brooks, the endorsed, then unendorsed Trump candidate, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be an interesting race, because Trump unendorsed Mo Brooks, who was one of the most MAGA-aligned Republicans in the House, who spoke at the January 6th rally and was one of Trump's biggest supporters. Because he was losing for a while in the polls, Trump unendorsed him, and there were some other issues between the two of them. But he is maybe true, even though he doesn't have Trump's endorsement anymore, he may be the clearest distillation of MAGA, of a MAGA Republican. But he's going to have a tough time against Katie Britt, who is the former chief of staff to Senator Shelby and has gotten some quiet support from groups aligned with Mitch McConnell.
What would you say is the critical lesson for Republicans considering Tuesday's results?
Well, Republicans who want to fight the extremes within their parties have a playbook. Governor Kemp showed the way. Now, keep in mind, he was the incumbent, he was the governor, he governed in a conservative fashion, even though he didn't indulge all these election conspiracy theories. But if Republicans spend money, if they back candidates that are mainstream, if they don't indulge the crazy, they can win. It's not like every Republican voter wants to vote for the most extreme candidate. But you've got to organize. You've got to spend money. In the case of Georgia, you had the Republican Governors Association spend $5 million to help Governor Kemp win re-election. In Alabama, you saw Katie Britt get support quietly from a group that was funded by one of Mitch McConnell's aligned super PACs by the tune of a couple million dollars. Like, that stuff matters. Helping promote good candidates matters, and we've seen that in Georgia and Alabama. We didn't see that in Pennsylvania, where Doug Mastriano, who is about as extreme as they get from any party, is now the gubernatorial nominee in Pennsylvania. So having a strong party or having leaders that can actually shape these primaries, support good candidates, makes a big difference.
We're speaking with Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. His piece is called The Republican Establishment Strikes Back, and he's analyzing Tuesday's results. I thought you made an interesting point at the end of the story where you said it appeared, I guess, in Georgia, that voters seem to think that at this point, former President Trump is only fighting for himself. What did you mean?
Yeah, look, Republican voters still like President Trump. These are not anti-Trump Republicans. But when President Trump only talks about the last election, and he's not talking about the economy, he's not talking about crime, he's not talking about illegal immigration, when he's dwelling on the 2020 election, and that's the condition by which he endorses candidates or not, many Republican voters have gotten past that. They may even agree with Trump on some of his comments about election integrity, but they want to hear a forward-focused message. And that was his big blunder, Trump's biggest blunder in Georgia, that he endorsed candidates only based on what they thought about whether they indulged his conspiracy theories about the 2020 election.
Thanks, Josh. Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies Summer Sale Event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Take the lead with Windows 10 Pro devices. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Summer Sale Event. Thanks for being with us. There's an intensifying mental health crisis, and it's impacting school shootings. But are there always warning signs? What about in this case in Uvalde, Texas? And why are warning signs often missed by caretakers, schools, and fellow students? Here's psychologist Greg Jantz, author of a book called The Anxiety Reset. Doctor, how do you see it?
Well, it is a huge crisis, and it's growing worse. As we came through the pandemic last 2.5-3 years, one of the things that we're at a tipping point. So a shooting comes along, and this is just enough to push some really over the edge of despair. And we are in a mental health pandemic. I've been treating mental health now for 38 years, and we are seeing the effects of this.
Okay, so for this particular accused gunman in Uvalde, Texas, it came out on Wednesday, there was no known mental health issues or arrests. I mean, how are we supposed to help a person like that? Or were there signs maybe that the family didn't let on about?
Well, I think there are signs that the family didn't realize. Posting pictures on Instagram as well as Facebook, and the pattern of leading up to this and some of the previous behaviors. So we dig into it just a little bit. We start to see, and there's common patterns when we look at these shooters, and I'm sorry to say that, and they also tend to come in pairs of two. So we just had the tragedy in Buffalo. Now we have this one. And usually the second one, if we look at this, is worse than the first one. Now, it crosses a line where it's so evil, there's no place to put this. It's like we don't have a way of processing this when kids are shot and killed. There's no place, we can't make any sense of it. And that's why we do enter in, and there's a mental health illness, but it's even beyond that, where there's a zone of evil.
So are we able to address something like that?
Well, yes, we can. We're in a mental health crisis because our mental health system is broke. And so often, and we see that, we'll have a person of concern, and we have them admitted through an emergency room, and 2 hours later they're out. So we don't have a system in most states that works very well. And the need is greater than our ability to deliver services right now. So we really have to go back and look at what is going on. How do we help? And, we have a generation, particularly the 12 to 17-year-olds. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for this age group. And so one of the things that we're seeing, and psychologists are calling this a foreshortened future. And what that means is this generation has no hope for the future. In 2021, we had the highest academic failure ever on record. And now that is followed by the depression rates and anxiety right now. Is the number one diagnosis. Anxiety is the number one diagnosis in our country. So we have a problem, and then it's followed by addiction. So the three top things we're faced right now is severe anxiety and all the chronic stress that everybody's gone through, followed by depression, followed by addiction. Addiction rates are growing at a rapid rate. So often there is addiction involved when there's the violence.
We're speaking with Dr. Greg Jantz, psychologist, also author of a book called The Anxiety Reset. And we're talking about the mental health crisis in our schools. I often say, I have a lot of friends who are teachers, they can identify who the troubled kids are, even if the rest of us cannot.
Gordon, it's so right. They can tell you.
Right.
And a lot of times a family member will say, I knew something was wrong.
Yeah. So what are those people supposed to do, though, the teachers or the family members? If a family member says something, right, you wind up losing your kid.
Well, what we do is we trust what we're sensing. I have dealt with family members that knew something was terribly out of order, and they turned in a family member. And that's a hard thing to do.
Sure.
Now, in this situation, we have a grandfather and grandparents, and, of course, the grandmother who was shot, who really probably didn't know everything, and they're in a very difficult place. And they're surprised. Well, there were firearms in the house. They didn't know that. So, but when trust yourself, that's the biggest thing. And generally, we send out mental health professionals. They usually come out in pairs of two, and they do have some authority to intervene and have a person held for a certain period of time.
It's Greg Jantz, psychologist and author of a book called The Anxiety Reset. 12 minutes now in front of the hour. High interest debt can put you into a financial hole, and a lot of people are too embarrassed to ask for help. That's where Upstart comes in. Upstart can help you get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date, whether it's for paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses. You can even receive funds in as fast as one business day, from $1,000 to $50,000. And checking your rate at Upstart has to be the easiest process ever invented. The questions are simple, the drop-down boxes are user-friendly, and the application took less than 5 minutes. In addition, all your responses are encrypted and do not affect your credit score, so you have complete security and privacy. Don't wait. Check your rate today at upstart.com/Gordon. That's upstart.com/Gordon to check your rate today. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Again, upstart.com/Gordon.
Start your day smarter. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Under a flag flying at half-mast, a crying woman distributed flowers and balloons to mourners gathered at a cathedral in San Antonio for an evening vigil to honor the victims of Tuesday's elementary school massacre. It was one of at least three vigils held across the state.
Number two.
Authorities continue to search for any motive in the shootings. The 18-year-old shooter had no adult criminal history, and investigators are having trouble finding any trace of friends. Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
As of this time, the only information that was known in advance was posted by the gunman on Facebook approximately 30 minutes before reaching the school.
The shooter legally owned two AR-15-style long rifles.
Number three.
Two gun measures have been placed on the Senate's legislative calendar of business, but it's unclear when they will be brought to the chamber's floor. Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin.
We have background checks. What we ought to do is enforce the laws we have in the books.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he will call for a vote today to proceed with the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act, which the House passed last week following the mass shooting in Buffalo. New Jersey Democrat Cory Booker.
I know he put a bill up, and I'm hoping it comes to the floor for a vote. It will fail. And Americans should know that. There are not, right now, seemingly 10 senators that want to do the most moderate of things, which is universal background checks.
Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt has signed a bill that bans nearly all abortions, making it the most restrictive abortion law in the country. The law allows an abortion only when the life of a pregnant woman is at risk or when a pregnancy is the result of rape or incest that has been reported to law enforcement. The Center for Reproductive Rights and Planned Parenthood say they will sue. The NFL says it will appeal a ruling denying a request to move former Las Vegas Raiders coach John Gruden's lawsuit against the league from a public courtroom into closed-door arbitration. Gruden's lawsuit accuses the NFL of leaking his racist, sexist, and homophobic emails to force him to resign last October. A judge yesterday rejected league bids to dismiss Gruden's claim outright or to order out of court talks that could be overseen by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell.
All right, thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Fourth grade teacher Irma Garcia, killed while protecting her students during a Texas school shooting, is the focus of a GoFundMe campaign spotlighted by Bill Pulte, who urged his 3.2 million Twitter followers to donate money to offset funeral costs and help the victim's family. Ms. Garcia, along with co-teacher Eva Morales, were among the 21 killed in a shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde. Mr. Pulte, told the Detroit Free Press that he noticed about $12,000 had been raised on the site within the first 10 hours, and family reached out, hoping to reach their $30,000 campaign goal. Since the Pulte tweet, donations have climbed past $123,000 from nearly 4,000 donors. Mr. Pulte is known internationally for his Twitter philanthropy. He's the grandson of the founder of Pulte Group, the home building giant. He declined to say how much he donated to the Garcia family. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.